Thank you so much. It's my pleasure to be here with you today. This is the second time I've presented to a Probus Club and thoroughly enjoy it and anticipate many, many questions coming forward as they do. So I'm going to rely on some of those technical people to curate that if they could. And happy to answer questions throughout the presentation. Certainly, there'll be time at the end as well. So just bear with me as I share my screen here and make sure we're off to a good start with the presentation. So if John, can you give me a thumbs up there if you can see the presentation okay now? Super. All right. We're off to a good start then. Well, again, I want to thank all of you for welcoming me today to present on alpaca farming in Ontario. It's an interesting topic that's growing, and really one of the reasons I love sharing it with folks is not just the unique and interesting subject matter, but it really is a new model of family farming in Ontario that's taken off. And certainly my family and I were accidental farmers. We had no intent to start a farm. I'm going to share that story with you and how and why we got into alpaca farming and a little bit more today too about the industry itself, how it's growing, what the product is, and where that's going. So it'll be a bit of a family story and it'll be a bit of a farming story as well. So I wanted to begin by just introducing myself and the family itself that runs this farm. Gone are the days where it takes a dozen kids to run a farm. You're going to learn a lot about how alpacas are a very light livestock option, very easy livestock option to raise. And so you're looking at the family that runs Oak Hills Alpacas. So we started, as John mentioned, Oak Hills Alpacas 12 years ago. At that point in time, my daughter was 10 years old. And that's an important number to remember. I was working for Sonia Batta back in the day. Actually, she bought the town of Battawa. For any of you that might know Batta Shoes and the town of Battawa, just north of Trenton on the Trent River, she bought the town of Battawa to redevelop it. And so I had taken on that project as the general manager of the project. And my husband works for Campbell Monuments. He's a monument craftsman. So he's out in cemeteries across Ontario doing stone masonry work is really the best way to describe it. But he often jokes that he'll be the last one to ever write your name. So you need to be nice to him. And if you knew how poor a speller he was, that would be a horrifying thought. But that is what he does for a living, is tool people's names into stone. So the three of us were busy people and a fun-loving child at the time who had really no intention of raising animals or anything else, but ostensibly moving back to the country. So I was originally from the Belleville area, grew up in the country, was a 4-H kid, not on a farm. I did all the home craft 4-Hs and things like that. But I'd run and play in the fields and, you know, had all the wonderful things that came with living in the country, snowmobiled all winter, you know, had all those great experiences. My husband, alternatively, is a city boy, and we joke and call him the city boy. He's from Ajax and born and raised there and never knew a thing about a blade of grass or farming or anything else. So we started our young family in town, as most people do, in a small house, and the country was always kind of tugging at me and pulling at me. So we started looking around at property and eventually landed on purchasing a plot of land and building a house, which was not our intent. But, you know, we found, as I'm sure many of you will find, you head out into the country and you either find these sort of palatial equestrian estates or these ramshackled, you know, homesteads, both of which are a little horrifying to families starting out. So we took the leap. We decided to build our house. And we went with an ICF construction, which is interior concrete form. So you'll see them going up now. It's sort of a styrofoam form on the outside, poured concrete on the inside to create a really energy efficient home. That was our goal. You know, we were all about sustainability and we had learned about this new form of construction and you know, the house was done. We built over the winter. That was another incredible adventure for us. And we'd settled into life in the country and we're really happy. We purchased 7 acres. So the field you see there, and then a field directly adjacent to it. So for those of you with experience in farming or land use planning, anything like that, you'll know that 7 acres does not make a farm. So you're probably scratching your head at this point going, now they've built a house in this field and what happens next? How did this become a farm? So it wasn't all about the cute alpacas by any means. It didn't start with that conversation. The conversation actually started with our accountant, who is my sister, who said, you know, you've gone and bought this property and someday you're going to want to sell it and there's going to be the issue of capital gains. And so we started to talk about that kind of financial planning. And she said, you know, maybe think about some kind of an agricultural use. And so we started thinking about that and we thought, you know, we're busy people and really, you know, this isn't something we can take on. What's doable for us that could be an asset to our life in the country? So we, you know, we started looking around and actually we were up in your area. We were kind of up in the Peterborough, Mimi area, sort of looking around and driving around one day, and we drove past an alpaca farm and we thought, well, you know, that looks kind of interesting. And as a knitter, I was familiar with alpaca as a yarn product, being a really premium yarn product. But we became a little bit intrigued. So like people do, we started doing our research and we learned so many things about alpacas that were appealing to us as busy people. And I'm going to get into that in a few minutes. So we were also looking for something that we could do together as a family. So you saw the three of us. We had a 10-year-old, a stonemason, and an economic development professional. So, you know, we weren't about to get into dairy. We weren't about to get into beef. We weren't going to be doing crops. We really didn't want to be involved in anything we had to slaughter. And the theme of our life had been sustainability. So we were learning more and more about the sustainability of this particular type of livestock. And I guess the other thing I'd say about why we got into alpacas is, you know, busy people really are never busy enough, right? The old adage, if you want something done, you find a busy person, is really true. And we were full of energy and enthusiasm, and this looked like something really fascinating that we could take on. So why alpacas? You know, what is it about alpacas that makes it possible for two career people and a 10-year-old to become farmers? Well, the first thing you need to know about them is they're really easy to care for. So everything about them is very, very simple. They're light on the land to begin with. So you can keep between 5 and 8 alpacas on a single acre of land. So when we start talking about the 7 acres, we were actually able to keep a small herd on that footprint. There was the issue of planning, and I can get into talking about the planning side of it if people have questions about that. But in our municipality, you're not allowed to have livestock on any less than 20 acres of land. We at that point owned 7. We now own 57, but at that point we owned 7 acres of land. So there's the question of how did we pull that off? And I'm happy to get into that if anybody has questions about that. I will just say that my master's degree is in rural planning, and I had built some pretty strong planning relationships with the municipality when I was working for Sonia Bada, which I was obviously doing at the time. So there was a lot of zoning conversations and things to be had. The other thing that really appealed to us about alpacas was, I'll share with you that back in my university days, one of the jobs I had for a couple of years while I was at university was working at a wildlife center in Ottawa. And, you know, at a wildlife center, every animal that comes in is sick. And every animal that comes in comes with a vet bill. And I will say that I was a little bit reticent about taking on livestock, knowing what kind of a financial commitment that could be for our family. I really had to be convinced that they were as healthy as the marketing material, as I perceived it to be, said they were. And I can tell you that in the first sort of probably 5-6 years, we saw our vet really only once. And that was when our first Cree arrived, and we were rookies, and we called the vet and asked him to come check the baby out and everything. And he giggled at us and he laughed at us and he complimented us on our barn and he showed us what to look for. And we didn't see them again for about 5 or 6 years. So they really are very, very healthy animals. So I was convinced after visiting many, many farms that we weren't going to be deluged in vet bills. The other thing about them is on the sustainability side, they eat very little. So 15 alpacas eat the equivalent of what one horse eats in hay every day. So if you picture that, you're going to be giving your horse a flake of hay. That will feed 15 alpacas. They come from the Altiplano region, which is a very mountainous region, so very sparse grazing. So they really don't need much in the way of food. I talked to you a little bit about our sensibilities around slaughtering and that type of thing. You know, that really wasn't the type of farming for me anyway. And so, you know, this is an animal that produces an end product of fiber. And yes, there are some people that harvest for meat as well. And it is a delicacy in North America. It's a staple in South America, something they eat. But there's an option to do alpaca farming without the need to slaughter. So that was appealing to us. I was a fiber arts enthusiast. I mentioned to you that I was a knitter. And for anyone that knits or has a wife that knits, alpaca is the equivalent of crack for a knitter. We say, you know, you get your hands on alpaca and you're never wanting to knit with anything else again. So if you want to give a knitter a really lovely gift, you know, a few skeins of alpaca yarn and you've hit the jackpot with them. So it was a really premium product that way. That was very appealing to me. I knew what that looked like. And then there's the whole issue of sustainability. So, you know, the work that I do is in economic development. I'm all about building sustainable, healthy businesses. Our family philosophy is all about living fairly lightly on the land and looking for sustainable ways to move our family forward, whether it's constructing our home or, you know, what we do with the property we own and that sort of thing. And so what we learned about alpacas was they have padded hooves, so a padding much like what your dogs will have on the bottom of their feet. So, you know, when they're out on pasture, they're very gentle on the pasture that way. So that's why you can keep them on quite a small footprint. They don't eat very much. They don't stomp down the pasture the way others do. And they actually, they only have teeth on the bottom. So they sear the grass off. They don't pull it out the way sheep do. And so you can actually keep them on a very small footprint that way. Very few inputs, but you have this very high-end output from them. And they process that feed very efficiently. So there's very little that comes out the other end. So your pastures are very clean. You may have heard that they all line up in a row and take turns and poop on one pile. And that is true. I didn't believe it when I started my research either, but our cleanup is very easy. So they process everything you put in, and that product they give you back is saleable too. And I'll talk about that a little bit later. But as I said, for me, even if we were doing this as a pastime, even if this was a mechanism, you know, to work our way around capital gains somewhere down the road, even if this was a way to, you know, have some write-offs for some of the things that we would be buying as a result of our rural lifestyle, I'm a little bit OCD and I need something that's going to be at least sustainable, if not profitable. And so I was the one writing up business plans. I was the one researching every end of it. And no matter how I worked the math, I didn't see us losing money on this. And I saw a lot of ways to be profitable if we chose to put that much energy into it, or what I perceived would be that much energy into it. So I was liking what I was seeing up to that point as well. And I've talked to you a little bit about the small footprint. So with the exception of the planning regulations, we had to work our way around, which we did. We certainly had a footprint that we could start a small farm on. Okay, it's not advancing for me here. John, just a heads up. Can you still see everything okay? Can you just give me a thumbs up if you're, I'm not frozen or anything, am I? Yeah, okay, we're good that way. So I'm just going to see what I can do to advance this forward for you here. Apologies for this. I'm looking at my 21-year-old to see if she can give me a hand here to unfreeze me. We're just, there we go. Okay. Thank you. I don't know what you did, but it's that magic of the youth that, or technical specialists like some of you on that managed to move things through. So when we weighed all those factors, we decided to push the button and go ahead. And I'll be honest with you, my husband went through a health crisis at the time. We thought he was going to get a very scary diagnosis. We got a positive diagnosis. And the day we got that phone call, I looked at him and said, well, you know, what are your thoughts on things? And he said, let's do it. Let's go ahead. So we looked at that backyard that you saw in front of the house, and we decided to stick with that single 3.5 acre footprint. And we built the barn, a three-sided runout barn. And we live in the Sterling area, and so our Amish neighbors became our new best friends. We hired them to build the barn, and you'll find this interesting. We quoted out the construction of the barn, and they came in at a quarter of the cost of any other contractor for building that barn. And I joked because alpacas are the gentlest animals. I mean, you really don't even need fencing to keep them in. It's more to keep the coyotes out. And they built us oak stalls and everything else. You know, I said, these are not draft horses. You know, these are alpacas, but we have a barn now that will stand up to anything. So the construction began. How did you get it to move through? There we go. Okay. So we worked away at that for several months, and this was the result. So a three-sided runout shelter, because alpacas do not need a tremendous amount of shelter. As you can see in the wintertime, they prefer to be outside. This was when the sun came up in the morning, and we wake up every morning to find they slept outside at night and enjoyed themselves outside. And then this barn runs out into five different pastures. So we don't lock them in at night. They make the decision, rather they come, they go, what they do. So that results for us in a very calm, you know, just gentle, happy herd. They can do what they want. The other side of it is, and the theme you're going to see to this is, we really truly are the lazy farmers. It means we don't have to go down at night and put them in. We don't have to wake up in the morning and let them out. They do their thing. You even have the ability with an animal like this to be able to, you know, to go away for a couple of days, leave them what they need, and come back with no difficulty. So next thing you know, we find we're farmers. So we got the barn constructed, and this gives you a bit of a better sense of what that barn looks like and how each of the pastures kind of run up to the barn itself. We got the barn constructed, and next was to acquire the herd. And you may remember me saying to you, remember the number 10. My daughter was 10 years old when we started this. And the starter herd that we purchased, she actually found by Googling. Once we got into this whole notion that we were going to start an alpaca farm, the 10-year-old let loose on the internet and knew every alpaca that was for sale in any corner of Ontario. And she came to us one night and said, you know, Mom, Dad, I've found this really fantastic herd that's, you know, a liquidation sale and everything. And we just kind of, yeah, sure, honey, you know, that's great. That's nice. And we started looking into it, and actually she'd done a fabulous job. There was some terrific genetics in this group, and it was a liquidation. Unfortunately, the woman's husband had passed away, and so she was unable to continue with the farm. They had just got started, so she really was a newbie at it and couldn't manage on her own. So we began with six alpacas and brought them home from the Niagara region and got started. And the next thing you know, miracles were literally happening in our backyard. I mean, you can see the house here. We didn't even have a deck on the back of the house yet before we had a farm in our backyard. And this is the arrival of our first Kriya, just getting onto his feet the first year that we had the alpacas, just minutes after he was born. And it just started to become this incredible experience for our family, and the herd started to grow. So I promised to share with you a few things about alpacas so you could get to know, you know, what they're all about, really where they come from and how they fit into the animal kingdom. So as I mentioned, they're originally native to South America. They come from what's called the Altiplano region, and that's where Chile, Bolivia, and Peru kind of come together in the mountains and meet. And so they're from that very mountainous area. So you can imagine as you start to get up there, there's no more trees, there's very sparse grazing. So their nutritional requirements are very, very limited. The other thing about them, they're from the camelid family. So you'll recognize that that, of course, includes camels, but also llamas and alpacas. And they all serve different purposes. Camels are meant for moving people around in the desert. Llamas were domesticated to pack items around. And the difference being with alpaca is that they were domesticated specifically for their fiber. So they were bred for fine, fine fiber. And back in, the Incan period, it was called the fiber of the gods, and only nobility were allowed to wear alpaca fiber. There's two types of alpacas out there in the world. So there's Wakaya, which is the type we raise that you see here. Their fiber grows directly out from their body, so they look like teddy bears once it comes to shearing time. And then there's Surrey alpacas, which have a bit more of a lustrous, bright fiber, and their fiber grows downward from their body in locks, almost like dreadlocks. And so they look like the sort of droopier form of alpacas out there in the pasture. Wakaya are much more common. So that's the direction that we went as newcomers, and we've taken off from there. They're a really gentle, curious animal. That was one of the criteria for us. You know, we had small children around all the time, and so we wanted something that, that the kids could go down to the barn and she could go down with her friends and play, and we weren't worried about them getting hurt. They're super with young kids. They're very curious. I mean, they are a prey species. So if you approach them, they'll step away. But if you ignore them, they'll be right in your pocket while you're doing chores and this kind of thing. And they are herd animals. So you can't keep an alpaca on its own. You have to keep them in groups of two, or we recommend three ideally to create that herd dynamic. They're generally around 5 feet tall. They range from about 120 to 200 pounds, and they have a long lifespan of 20 years. So a productive lifespan of into sort of 15, 16. We've even had males at 17 that were still breeding. Their babies are called cria. So they have a cria once a year because the gestation period for them, 345 days. And for a 10-year-old, that's a lot of waiting. So, a couple of years into this venture, we asked our daughter, "What have you learned from alpacas?" And she said, "Patience." So she'd get pretty excited about those babies, but it'd take a while for them to come. They are a registered breed as well. So we have a registry in Canada and a registry in the US. And so there's DNA testing that goes on with them. There's microchipping. They do get shown and this sort of thing. So they definitely have become an established species and an established livestock sector in Canada. So the other reason why alpacas, it's really all about the fiber. As I mentioned, this is a fiber that we measure by the micron count. And so this is something that's incredibly soft. It takes you softer than cashmere. It has thermal properties that keep you incredibly warm in the winter. That's why alpaca socks are so popular. It also has antimicrobial characteristics to it, so that you can actually wear a pair of alpaca socks, I'm going to say it, for months. Some people do. Some people wear them all season, quite frankly, because they don't smell, they wick the moisture away. And so it's just not an issue that way. So the fiber, as I mentioned, is known as the fiber of the gods. And you can see us shearing it off here on the right-hand side. It's one of the finest fibers in the world. It's one of the strongest fibers in the world. It has those antimicrobial properties we talked about, but it's also hypoallergenic because there's no lanolin associated with it. And that's often what makes most people allergic to wool, is the lanolin in it. The other incredible thing about it is that alpacas come in 22 different natural colors. So our pastures can get pretty colorful from time to time. You'll have everything ranging from the white you see here, you get into creams and then fawn colors and brown. There's even some peachy shades to them. Then you start to get into some of the dark, rich mahogany colors of brown. You move then into grays, and you can go in kind of a steel gray direction or a rose gray direction, and then you get into blacks as well. So people really, it appeals to them because of the no dye required, you know, to have a really colorful fiber product. That made it very popular for us in the beginning because we specialized in knit baby clothes. We don't do the retail anymore. We just specialize in helping people start alpaca farms. But when we were doing it, it was very popular. You could sell a baby sweater for $300 quite easily in gift shops, and we did. It was quite good. They'll produce about 2 to 6 inches of fiber a year, which we shear in the spring and May. Generally speaking, 5 to 15 pounds of fiber, and that fiber sells in the retail market for between $20 to $75 a pound. So as I mentioned, in May, first week in May every year is shearing day for us. It's a big day for us. The big joke is try to sell as many animals as you can before shearing day amongst our family because they come and volunteer with us. And a shearing day for an alpaca starts with a photo shoot. So they get their before picture taken. Then they go to the station you see in the right-hand side where they get their fiber blown out. So all the dust and everything is blown out. We reverse the shop vac to do that. Then they hop up onto the shearing table. All of that fiber comes off on the shearing table. We do our herd health for the year at that point in time with shots, any vaccines and things they need, any vitamins they need. We'll do teeth trimming if they need it, toe trimming if they need it, and then off the table they come for their after shot. So they have a before and an after picture taken every year on shearing day. Value-added products are really the big thing from alpaca farming. So you can sell the yarn outright. It sells for about $40 a skein. But you can enhance products by obviously turning into the yarn I mentioned, but the knitwear, there's some of the baby clothes that we did. You can turn it into what are called rovings, and that's what spinners use. So it looks like cotton candy. It's milled up into sort of a fluff, and spinners use that to spin yarn. Weaving, needle felting, knitting, people turn it into duvets, use it for insulation. Insoles are absolutely fantastic to keep your feet warm. Bedding for dog beds, nesting ornaments for the birds. We go right down to the waste fiber that can't go to the mill, and we use it for things like dog beds and nesting ornaments. And then, of course, with any farm, there's other products. So we have hens here. We have the eggs. We used to sell our manure. It's actually higher in nutrients than sheep's manure. But we now do an exchange with a CSA farmer that's organic, and they use it as an organic fertilizer in exchange for vegetables. So they'll come pick up manure in the spring, and then we get vegetables dropped off at our door all year long. So that works well for us. We also do bees here on the farm, and so we have honey products, manure down there on the left-hand side that you saw, and we even do sustainable timber harvest. We now have a 50-acre woodlot. That was left to me by my dad, and every 10 years or so, we will do a harvest from the woodlot. We also offer other services. This is big now, things like weddings. We decided this past year, just at COVID time, ironically, that we would start saying yes to the people that were calling and wanted alpaca at their weddings. My daughter actually, at about 14, started showing for other people, training for other people. So she had a small business doing that and now owns her own herd. And we also will do the odd special event, and go out and do things like that too. So very quickly, what do you need to raise alpacas? You need a small footprint of rural land. You need a shelter from rain, wind, and sun. You do need family commitment. You know, this is a family project, as within any farm, we all play a different role. And so it is a family project, not a one-person project. You need that pasture that we talked about and predator protection. So for us, that's a livestock guardian dog and also 5-foot perimeter no-climb fencing. You need a good source of feed, which is now readily available from feed stores. A hay supplier, and then obviously your fresh water supply, which we do rainwater harvesting at the barn. And that's our water supply. And then you do need business skills. And this is sometimes the missing piece. Every farmer is first a good business person. And so, you know, you have to market your fleece and the animals. A farm is never stagnant. So you need somebody involved in the project that has that business side of things. So what does 12 years of alpaca farming look like for us to date? We've had 27 Kriya born here. We've sold 85 alpacas. We've started now 20 new alpaca farms across Quebec and right up through to Sudbury. I do a bit of writing, so I've had 30 articles published and 8 cover photos on magazines. And we started a new project last year whereby all of our felt fiber gets turned into alpaca insoles, which we then donate to a homeless project in our community so that they have something to put in their shoes to keep their feet warmer. And so this will be the second year we do that. So somewhere in the neighborhood of 35 to 40 insoles a year we'll donate to the homeless project. So you certainly can't talk about something like this without talking about the team, which started with our small extended family at the top and extends to about 40 people that show up every year on shearing day and help us to turn them from kind of what you see on the right-hand side of that lower picture to what you see on the left. On shearing day, you look out in your pasture at the end of the day and you don't even recognize the animals that are out there. There's not much to them. As you can see, that neck is pretty skinny when you get all that fiber off. They're a pretty small animal under that. So I wanted to close by just sharing with you what's really new in alpaca farming and what's changed that I've seen in the 12 years. Well, one thing that's really huge for us is offering workshops. A lot of people want to learn remotely or have hands-on experiences. Before COVID, we were doing on-farm workshops to know what it's all about. So that research that we did before we started farming, they're looking for that as a product. So we've been offering that. COVID-19 came along and has changed things. It has increased our business by 200%. People are starting to look at their life, evaluate their life, and say, what am I waiting for? You know, if this is something they were thinking about doing. People living in the city are making our phone ring off the hook, you know, to say, what is it like to really live in the country, you know, raise something like alpacas? Is this something that we can do? And of course, real estate agents will tell you, we've seen that real boom in migration from the city to the country. Rather they raise livestock or not, people are looking, you know, to get out of that urban environment, having lived through COVID. There's a real boom in fiber arts right now too. So the pricing on the product has gone up. There's a real strong market for the fiber. When we first started, we had to process it ourselves and sell the end product. We don't get involved in that at all anymore. Our fiber is sold before it's shorn and it goes out the door the same day it's shorn, which is really quite nice for us. And there's a real demand for alpaca experiences too. So, you know, our motto on the farm is we don't raise alpacas, we raise alpaca farmers. We specialize in farm starts. But there's a real boom now on people wanting to not be farmers, but have alpaca experiences. So doing alpaca yoga, where they have a yoga class in the pasture and the alpacas wander around through them. Doing alpaca trekking, which is essentially, you know, walking trails with alpacas and things like that. So we've started a number of farms that specialize now, especially around the GTA, in creating those experiences for people. So for us, it's been quite an adventure, quite an evolution. We've enjoyed every minute of it. It's been very rich for us and our family. It's turned into a business that's going to keep us very busy full time. When we retire, we're looking forward to putting more of our time and energy into it. And it's turned our daughter into a real entrepreneur as well. She's now in fourth year at the University of Guelph, and I would venture to say that it's completely changed the trajectory of her life than it would have had we have kept that field vacant and let the farmer next door take hay off of it. So that's a little bit about our alpaca adventure and a little bit about what's going on in alpaca farming in Ontario.